the Israelis have a nudist camp on Taba, right by Egypt on the Gulf of Aqaba. Bathers sunning on the beach were dangerously within reach of Muslim guards patrolling near the spa. And now it says to cover up in the Koran, but those Hebrews hung it out to get a tan. So for fear of getting heated, the Egyptians just retreated, which provoked this novel thought for a peace plan. Take off your clothes to those you oppose. Be well exposed to your foes and strike a pose. No need to hurl a rock across the fence if your enemy is being real attentive. Strip to the buff, stick out your duff and strut your stuff. The sight of muck will be enough to halt the tough. Forget about an armored probe, you'll get more room if you disrobe. Relations will improve around the globe. Now the colonel of the Egyptian police platoon made this comment as he peered beyond the dune. All these sabras on the Sinai really look a sight to mine eye, though I think we'd better take some action soon. As he turned, he saw the men of his fine crew, field glasses trained on each attractive Jew. So he went and gave the order to redefine the border 100 yards down farther from the view. Take off your clothes to those you oppose. Be well exposed to your foes and strike a pose. You can unveil a devastating offensive. It's healthier than war and less expensive. Strip to the buff, stick out your duff and strut your stuff. The sight of muff will be enough to halt the tough. Forget about an armored probe, you'll get more room if you disrobe. Relations will improve around the globe. Now here's the surest way to end a running feud. Simply approach your adversary in the nude. If he or she's a prude, they'll think it's lewd and move away. Who knows, they might be in the mood. You win either way. So if you're fighting and you just can't take it, you just might try your luck at standing naked. Before they have another riot, Northern Ireland should try it. The whole world could ease its tensions if we'd only undertake it. I propose this brand new cure for hot disputes. Have the warring parties meet in birthday suits. Imagine how a summit conference might progress. Formalities abandoned as each delegate undressed. No harm in getting back to bare essentials. World leaders must admit it has potential. For uncovered, one can make appeals to what the other side reveals and see they're not so different after all. Take off your clothes to those you oppose. Be well exposed to your foes and strike a pose. No need to hurl a rock across the fence if your enemy is being real attentive. Strip to the buff, stick out your duff and strut your stuff. The sight of muff will be enough to halt the tough. Forget about an armored probe, you'll get results if you disrobe. Relations can improve around the globe. Oh yes indeed, relations will improve over the globe.
And that was indeed Mark Levy, Take Off Your Clothes to Those You Oppose, from his 1986 album of the same name. And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes Pier Robert Norse, and you're about to hear Bathrobes Pier Broadsides, the Monday, August 19th edition. Again, we are on tape today because the station is still looking for a home. So if you have a home for the station, give us a call. You can give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. HUFF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is the organization that I work with, concerned with homeless civil rights. But I have a long, eager answering machine waiting at my phone. And if you want to phone in any comments to the show or offers for a place to place a radio station or critical comments or new exciting songs for any of the city council candidates who are running against the sleeping ban, that includes Kristen Anderson and David Silva, to name only two. Rodent hasn't yet spoken up about whether he favors or opposes the sleeping den, and hopes he opposes it, and not his own or Eisenberg. Anyway, you can leave a message at 423-HUFF, and you can do that during the show or at any time during the week. Radio Free Radio Santa Cruz's number is usually 427-3772, and you may actually be able to get some on that line, but things are kind of hopping today because the cops, at least were, as of 24 hours ago, planning to move in on Campbell Street to evict the Campbell Street folks, and the Campbell Street folks are demanding relocation money, which they apparently were promised, and they're not getting, and so there's a certain resistance happening there. There may even be resistance happening during the show. So you might want to come on down to Campbell Street. That's 120 Campbell between Broadway and Barston in Santa Cruz. You can't miss it. It's the big house in the middle of the block with all the funny writings all over it. And there's supposed to be a mad tea party out front. You can bring your own tea and your own tea set, or just come on in and pull up a chair. It's the Don't Evict Us Yet, We're Not Ready to Go party at Campbell Street today, August 19th, 1996.
I would find a cabinet that could cut domestic spending. Made a little mistake. Found a cabinet that cut spending on domestics.
You found a way to win some votes. Then Haitians read your campaign quotes. Now you blockade their fleet of boats.
I stand for everything.
You cut the deficit in half.
I once said that. Don't make me laugh.
There's Chelsea School and the Nanny Gap.
I'm the IHOP Waffle King. I've taken stands on both sides now, both pro and con.
You've shown us how your views you're gonna rearrange.
I always said I stand for change. Change my mind. Did it again.
The middle class will pay more tax.
I'm into fudge and not Big Macs.
Don't be surprised if Al Gore acts more like Danny Quayle.
Whoa, did I say I'd never pass a tax on coal and oil and gas?
And next time that you're smoking grass,
I'll change, I will inhale. I'm making change on all sides now.
On every day a different vow.
I'm giving up my bus for an Air Force jet.
You'll wash away your gray so you'll be brunette.
I'm trading in my sacks for a clarinet.
Do you? The United States of America.
Well, that's not a promise. That's more of a goal.
And that's a selection from the Joy of Sax, an early Capitol Steps album from 1992-93, when Big Bill was just beginning his reign. Now it's thundering, and we've got Big Bill destroying the welfare system. There's a great story on that by Alexander Coburn in the Anderson Valley Advertiser, a newspaper I heartily recommend to anybody who wants to wander into the book loft next to the video theater to get it. You can also get that newspaper in two places from which I'm barred, the bookshop Santa Cruz and the Java House. They sell it for a dollar, used to be 75 cents. Real good coverage of a lot of national issues, which I don't spend a lot of time on this show because I figure, well, you can go to the Anderson Valley Advertiser or some other good sources. You don't need me for that. This show is about civil rights for the poor in Santa Cruz mostly, and also in other places around the state and the nation. So for our first interview today, we're going to join Gideon Michael Cessna. Gideon is a vigiler, protester in front of the City Hall Sleepers protest, a protest that's now in its 171st, possibly 172nd day on the, as of August 19th. And that protest, of course, is concerned with getting the City Council to make modifications in the city's anti-homeless camping ban so that the sleeping ban sections will be removed, or at least suspended, for the duration of the current housing emergency, which the council itself declared last year in 1995, and in fact had declared in 1990 as well, and has never rescinded. So there was a housing emergency in Santa Cruz. Gideon is currently one of the mainstays of the vigil, which can be found at 809 Center Street any hour of the day, any day of the week, and it looks like, the way we're going, any week of the year. That's 809 Center, right across from the main library here in Santa Cruz. They need your help. They need blankets. They need food. They need people. They need phone calls to the mayor's office. They need the proper candidates supported at the upcoming scan forum on Wednesday, the 21st of August, which is going to be happening at 7:30 at Loudon Nelson Center. So let's hear what Gideon has to say. He talks about an incident where he suffered serious injury as a consequence, fundamentally, of the anti-homeless law, the sleeping ban, because it's illegal to sleep at night. People in Santa Cruz have to stay awake if they want to be completely legal, and particularly if they're at the vigil, because at the vigil, Mayor Mike Rotkin has gotten an injunction which makes even one act of falling asleep a potential misdemeanor crime punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. This then is an interview with Gideon and what happened to him when he was walking that tightrope and staying awake at night.
August 18th, 1996 at 3:10, and we're here at the Foster's Freeze in downtown Santa Cruz. We're having a rare meal, a rare non-liquid meal, Mr. Gideon, or Gideon Michael Cessna, as some have called you. You have
lived to get that far.
Indeed. I'm going to watch my tongue here. You're a man who suffered a serious jaw injury about, what, a month ago?
Approximately a month ago.
And what was that all about?
A month ago today, actually. That was all about the... I was a casualty of war. And the war was against city council, basically.
Well, that's the war against the poor that city council was waging against the sleeping people?
Yes, the sleeping people. The very awake sleeping people. In more ways than one, I was one of them in more ways than one.
You were, in fact, a protester at the City Hall Sleepout, right?
Yes.
How long have you been a protester?
Since approximately day 30-something.
Wow, so you've been a protester for the last, we're now on day 171 here.
Yeah, so that's a while.
City Hall Sleeping protest against the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz. City law makes it illegal to sleep outside after 11 o'clock at night, even if you have no place to be or go.
Correct.
And you were at the City Hall protest. In fact, you've gotten one of the rare injunction sleeping tickets, correct?
Yes.
You face up to 6 months in jail because of one act of sleeping at City Hall.
Well, I've gotten numerous tickets.
But you've gotten one ticket in particular that makes you vulnerable to misdemeanor charges in court, right?
The last one that I got, yes, which was put on a completely different case number, so I don't exactly understand how that will connect or relate to me.
You were charged, nonetheless, and at some point during this whole thing, you say a month ago, you became a casualty.
Yes. The ticket that I think you're referring to was actually the one I received after the accident, the day of my surgery.
So right beforehand. What was the accident?
I was right across the street from City Hall at the library. It was approximately 10 in the morning, 10 a.m. in the morning. I had done another all-night guard duty shift.
The reason you have to stay up all night is what?
For at least two reasons, one of which being that a vigil, by definition, is something that consists of awake people. And being a 24-hour vigil, people have to be there around the clock awake. Even if some people there are sleeping, there have to be some people there that are awake and staying alert. The other reason that having people there awake is important is obviously that we need someone as a first alarm system against the police when they try to sneak up on us to give us the tickets.
Because if you get a ticket, not only do you face a $160 fine, but because of the injunctions, some people there face up to 6 months in jail?
Correct. Yeah.
Isn't there also fear of troll busters?
Yes.
Well, Becky Johnson, we interviewed you earlier today with her video recorder.
Yes. There has been a definite existence of 12-lesters going by the City Hall area. I don't think there's necessarily much fear necessary compared to the fear that's necessary concerning the police.
So the problem is to, I guess, wake up the sleepers if the police come around. And this was particularly important in the days after the injunction, when Mike Rutkin was talking, the mayor was talking about closing down the council grounds by having the council pass a new law, because he couldn't get the courts to do it, to close the grounds at night. And so you had an accident at this point, and it was related to your ability to sleep, or?
Yeah, that's correct. I'd been there for several months, and like I said, this was approximately a month ago that the accident happened. And it was definitely an accident that was related to sleep deprivation.
You fell down.
I fell down.
And what happened?
Just like that, blacked out, fell over, landed on my jaw, and as I came to, I had no idea what had happened to me, and I subsequently found out later at Dominican that I had something broken, and I got some minor medical attention that day, which was basically consisted of some very poorly taken x-rays and the suturing of the laceration on my chin, and that was about it. And it took me about three more days to get through the paperwork required for me to acquire further medication. Medication, which I didn't get, but medical attention. Which
you actually ended up, your jaw had been fractured and broken both.
Right. On the left side of my face, I had my mandible very, very close to the joint shattered with fragments that needed to be removed. I had a hairline fracture right under my chin where the laceration was, and on the right side of my face, in almost the same spot as the left side of my face, I had a nice clean break almost all the way through. So, bottom part of my jaw, for all intents and purposes, was almost completely removed from my head on the inside.
So you needed surgery.
I needed surgery. I needed my mouth wired up as well, which is the typical treatment that they issue for such jaw injuries.
So what about all the fragments of bone inside your head or inside your, under the skin?
Well, they went in and did oral surgery on the inside through the back of my mouth.
Were you awake, or was this?
I was awake because they did not issue me anesthesia, because the insurance, quote unquote, that I was able to get through this 3-day process did not cover extraneous expenses such as anesthesia and pain medication.
So were you screaming throughout the entire operation?
I wasn't exactly screaming, but it was an excruciating, grueling process that took about 4 hours.
Now you had, did they give you a local anesthetic, or?
They gave me a Valium.
They gave you a Valium for a major operation like this?
A Valium. To calm me down, to relax me.
Who was the doctor?
One of that Christian charity you get at Dominican.
I see, yeah.
The operation was actually done at Cypress Medical Clinic, and it was performed by Dr. Steele.
Appropriately named. Dr. Steele, or
Dr. Steele, yes.
Perhaps stealing your basic rights for a poor person to have
right
anesthesia
to avoiding cruel and unusual punishment.
So you were then unable to get pain medication after this, right?
That's correct. Afterwards, they gave me some. It was supposedly 2 days worth of Tylenol. I see. And so they basically handed me a small bottle of aspirin and said that that was all they could do for me.
And do you think this is related to your indigent status?
Yeah, definitely.
Did they tell you that? Why do you think that was the case?
Well, they didn't tell me that in so many words, except for the paperwork that I had to do the day I went in to get my surgery done. And I was under the impression that the paperwork that I had over those 3 days gone through was enough. And when I went in for my appointment, I was told that I had to fill out more and that I didn't come in with the papers that I was supposed to have. And the person that works over at the Human Resources over in Coral Street, Jennifer, the nurse there, pulled a lot of strings to make sure that I got the treatment. They had to call her there while I was waiting in the waiting room.
Is that the Homeless Resource Center?
Yeah.
But apparently not enough strings to get you a basic anesthetic, huh?
Right, right. Or proper... According to the surgeon and the nurses that assisted in the process, normally they prescribed Vicodin, which is a pretty heavy-duty painkiller. Having experienced Vicodin in the past, I know what Vicodin is, and I know that Vicodin definitely would have been something that would have helped me through that first week or two of the post-surgery experience.
You were also homeless, correct?
That's correct, yeah. It was.
They didn't offer you housing or a hospital bed?
Yeah. I did not get a voucher for a comfortable place to stay after the surgery.
Did Paul Brendel of the, I guess he's, what's it called, the Shelter Project, did you approach him?
No, not that I know of. I haven't met anyone named Paul over there.
They didn't refer you to him, right?
No, no. Basically, I had to go through a lot of hell, you know, and I'm still experiencing a lot of pain, especially when I try and rest my head at night on anything. I can't really turn on my side so much. Eating.
You know, this is unbelievable. I mean, you have to go through 4 hours of surgery without anesthesia. I mean, that's, I don't know how you call that. That sounds like torture to me. And torture to save a dime or two, or, well, be more than a dime, you know, the way Dominican charges. They charge, what, 2-3 times what the cost would be somewhere else? So, normal people can't even afford these costs, much less indigent. Unbelievable. This is, you know, here's a Dominican hospital, which is supposed to be a Catholic charity set up to alleviate human suffering and to provide health care in this community, and to treat this man in this way is unbelievable.
But you probably believe it, don't you?
I believe it. I was there, and I've had several people encourage me to try to investigate how I may fight this legally. I'm definitely interested in doing such because I really think that I was not taken care of at all for many reasons. When I went in for the emergency service the day that it happened, the Dominican, the x-rays they took were blurry. And they only told me that I had a hairline fracture and a small break over here. When I went in to get the surgery done 3 days later, the x-rays they took showed shattered bone fragments over here, a severe break over here, which they didn't even see at all, and a hairline fracture here. I also told them that I suspected that I had crushed cartilage in my joint or possibly a dislocated jaw up here. They didn't investigate it. They didn't tell me anything about it afterwards. They didn't offer any suggestions as to how I may be able to help myself or get help for part of the injury that I suspected. I asked them to look into and they didn't.
You know, the risk of superinfection or gangrene setting in a case like this with extensive injuries that Gideon suffered is greatly increased with the
shot. You got some nursing training yourself?
Yeah, I went to nursing school, and I've worked in hospitals and nursing homes, and I'm also a self-educated person. And this is that, you know, I hope that you're recovering from this, but I mean, there is a higher incidence of infection, and if it did go to that, the medical costs would be tenfold what has been paid already.
Have you had antibiotics prescribed for you?
No, I didn't.
So have you noticed any infection? Would you have noticed that?
I didn't notice any.
Because all the general pain in the area, it'd be hard to tell.
Yeah, it'd be hard to tell.
Were you taking your temperature on a daily basis?
I think I went through a few days there where I thought I might have had a fever, a small fever, but it died down after a while.
Fever is a very common indicator of infection.
Yeah. Well, I'm lucky that I'm normally a very strong and fast healer in a lot of ways, but I don't think anyone, you know, the quote-unquote average person with average, quote-unquote, rates of healing would be very prone to infection under similar circumstances, which would definitely increase the problems.
Did you bring this case
and the cost to the city?
Did you bring this case to the attention of any city officials like the mayor?
No, I have not yet.
You know, it was mentioned rather briefly at a...
I'm waiting for the next city council meeting.
Yeah, it's in September.
10th, I believe. September 10th. I plan on being there.
Now that your jaw is starting to heal up.
Yeah, now that I took it upon myself to take out what they put in.
In fact, you removed the wiring that had locked your jaw shut?
Yes, I did. I removed it myself with toenail clippers so that I could eat, because I was literally suffering extreme headaches pretty much on a daily basis because I was unable to find food that I could get through the space provided in where one of my front incisors, upper incisors, is now missing because of the accident.
And proper nutrition is extremely important in recovering from an injury like this. I had extensive injured area in his face, and getting improper nutrition would increase the risks of infection and greatly slow down the healing process.
Yeah. Normally, when any kind of injury occurs in a human, they have to consider what a normal healthy diet would be, and you know, multiply that a good number of times in order to overkill on the whole system so that it can fight off a trauma. And
do you think that your case exemplifies this bad treatment that poor people get in this county?
Definitely. I was shocked. And I thought I was already seeing good examples of poor treatment and prejudice. And this shocked me. I had not expected at all to see such primitive, I wouldn't even want to give a bad name to primitive cultures in saying that this was primitive and barbaric.
And Frankensteinish.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, life is deep in Santa Cruz.
Yes. Yes. And this is a town full of money, and if you've got money, you might do okay. But as we're seeing, those without are moved out.
And you're back at the vigil. I noticed apparently you were able to stay in a couple of sympathetic activist homes, right?
Yes, so I was able to stay at two various places off and on throughout the last 3 weeks or so.
Last night you returned to your old tricks of...
I've been there for 3 days.
3 days at the vigil.
4 days back at the vigil, yeah.
And you said that there were 7 people sleeping there last night.
7 people sleeping there last night. I was one of them, which is a good sign. I think the energy at the vigil is picking back up into a very positive one again. For a while there, it was a little scattered, maybe even a little negative, you know. We we're worn out. We're tired.
171 days.
71 days now added up. The various people who've been there, you know, on a every other day basis or on average, of deprived sleep. This affects a person incredibly on the psychological level. And stress and worrying about the cops, worrying about the court cases and the dates and the things that we got to remember to take care of, this and that, wondering where we're going to get our food because we can't leave the vigil. These things
you'll be able to eat your food because one act of cooking, preparing, and storing food is part of the 6 month jail sentence.
Exactly.
Potentiality.
Yeah, wondering where we can go hide a little box of donated food so that we don't get busted for that. You know, these things have severely affected our psychological morale, and you know, it's no wonder that off and on we've experienced periods of tension amongst the troops. So I'm happy to say that recently the morale has gone back up, and there's been actually a good number of supporters coming back. Some strangers coming into town, strangers who live locally, who have been coming by recently, and there's signs of some kind of renewed support for it. There's a lot of, I would say there's a lot of support.
In what way do you see the support manifesting itself?
Visitations and donations, mostly. That's all really we can really see from our point of view there.
There's a large march yesterday, I understand.
Yes. Yeah, there was about 30 to 40 people. Went through town all the way down here to Taco Bell, starting at the clock tower on Pacific, and then back again, and then ended at the vigil.
And in the process, we acquired three new supporters who are planning to stay at the vigil with us.
Great.
On a semi-permanent basis.
What I'm finding is a lot of people are now aware of the sleeping ban that previously weren't, and they've had time to digest this and to kind of see through the standard lies that have been, or lines that have come from our the leaders on the city council. And so there's this growing awareness of the human rights violations that are going on, inflicted by this law. And I think, you know, with this welfare bill, you call it the welfare decapitation bill, I call it. And they say, we'll reform welfare as we know, reform us to death. That there's a growing awareness that there's this increasingly larger, more desperate section of society, the poor, and that we better figure out some different ways of dealing with this situation.
Anything you want to add or conclude with, Gideon?
I've thought of a couple really good ones in the last couple of weeks. Unfortunately, they're not coming to me right now, but I do promise
when your jaw was wired shut and you couldn't speak.
And I couldn't speak, and they were building up, and I do promise to have some choice words and my 2 cents worth for Rutkin and his cohorts on September 10th, which is the next city council meeting. And anyone who is listening, I and a lot of the other vigilers at City Hall encourage to come on down and join the City Hall meeting.
Earlier this spring, there were numerous meetings between Councilmembers Catherine Byers, Celia Scott, and some of the key vigilers like Dan Hopkins and Pat Ring, Sandria Roth. And those meetings kind of ended, but I understand that having spoken to City Council Member Byers, she's willing to resume the meetings. I've been concerned that people like Byers, who wring their hands and talk a good line, have not been willing to bring the issue of the sleeping ban to a vote at the City Council, where I think it needs to be before the election, so that the four council members, the seats who are up for election, three of whom are running again, Byers, Rotkin, and Matthews, those city council members will be faced at the election with a real, the voters will see a real choice that they can make around these people. What do you think of that?
Well, as far as the those two, I sense that they're fairly sincere.
Talking about Celia Scott and Captain Byers?
That is correct. I feel that they're fairly sincere in their desire to help out. They're, you know, they're at least somewhat compassionate enough to spend some time on their own.
It's not enough time to put it on the agenda of the City Hall.
Yes, I have noticed that they have not.
Now, what about the idea of pressing for a vote? I mean, even if they lose the vote, nonetheless, Rodkin and Matthews will have to vote too.
Yeah.
People can see what their vote is.
Yeah. Let the public see in the forum there, really, how they are going to act towards
us. I would very much like to see Celia Scott and Catherine Byers present a proposal at City Council for some sort of modification to the camping ban law. Even as the minors change, if they would bring it up, that we can have a public discussion on it. And also, I want to remind three radio listeners that if you want to watch City Council on what's this September 10th meeting, and you can't actually get down to the chambers yourself, watch it on Channel 72, TCI cable only. Sorry, you Sonic people. And that's community TV, which broadcasts the City Council meetings every time. And the other guarantee the oral communication should be very entertaining.
Well, there actually will be City Council members gathering long before that. In fact, on Wednesday, August 24th, there's going to be a scanned forum. August 21st, there'll be a scanned forum, 7 o'clock at Loudoun Nelson Center, where Matthews, Rodkin, and Byers will be clustering to get the groupie endorsement of the
Scam endorsement.
Cluster fuck
on the radio?
Yeah. Well, let's leave it at that, and hope we can see you folks down at the upcoming forums. And if you want, come on down to City Hall, 89 Center Street, with any kind of support you can provide, or give a call to the Revolutionary Coalition at 421-9250 to offer your support. The Revolutionary Coalition also has marches from the town clock every Saturday at 2. And they also meet, and you can come to their meetings, just give them a call, and they'll tell you where to go, so to speak.
Daycare call, want the mom go home.
Daycare
call, want the mom go home. I was on the baby and Santa.
Daycare call, want the mom go home.
Honey, quick me fall, so it's you fun and fast.
Daycare call, want the mom go home.
When I get to me office and I just show up.
Daycare call, want the mom go home.
The daycare call and say me to throw up. Mr. Nanny, 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 little Micah.
Take care, poor one, the mom go home.
Nanny, Pakistani, Mommy doesn't pay the FICA.
Take care, poor one, the mom go home. She's 6 months, 7 months, 8 months old. Take care, poor one, the mom go home.
Give me 6 weeks, 7 weeks, 8 weeks off.
No! Take care, poor one, the mom go home.
This mom could run department of the justice good.
Take care, poor one, the mom go home.
Zoe wouldn't pay her tax, but Kimba would.
Take care, poor one, the mom go home.
Daycare is an issue that the mom can't bear.
Take care, poor one, the mom go home.
How come it doesn't matter when the nominee is male?
Take care, poor one, the mom go home.
When they care call, make the dad go home.
And That's more of the joy of sax from the Capitol Steps. You're listening to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, On the Move, Bathrobe Spears Broadside, Civil Rights in Santa Cruz. I'm your host, Bathrobe Spear Robert Norse. We wish you could call in, and we hope you will be able to call in the future, but right now all you can do is call in and complain, or make after-the-fact comments. Call if you want to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Next we have a bit of history for you. Interesting case back in 1992 in March, in April, April 16th in fact, when I was being tried for contempt of court. Now I recently was released from 28 days in jail for another contempt of court charge which I served. That was for violating a court order which barred Food Not Bombs from serving free food in San Francisco. Utterly preposterous, of course. And the longest amount of time anyone has ever spent in jail for serving free food that I've ever heard of beat Sandy Loringer's Santa Cruz record down here when she served in 1989 by about 6 days, 5 days, something like that. Anyway, this case in 1992 was a much briefer contempt of court. But it stemmed from a button that I wore into court, a round political button, about an inch and a half in diameter, which said, "Fuck judges without justice." And what it referred to was the kind of justice that homeless people were getting in the Santa Cruz courts, and specifically the kind of justice that Red Top Robert Flory, who's now a Food Not Bombs worker, and then Food Not Bombs in Santa Cruz had not yet been formed, but he was a homeless activist at that time, and he was being jailed by Heather Morris without around the issue of the sleeping ban. His defense in court against the sleeping ban was a rather novel one, and one that had been successful in several courts before several judges. Since the sleeping ban is an infraction, at least that's how the authorities have been prosecuting it, though theoretically two instances of sleeping are a misdemeanor if you use that section of the law, which up to now, and indeed it now will be used apparently, but hasn't been used at that time, back in 1992, when this case was reaching the courts. A sleeping ban was an infraction case, which means that you could only be punished by a fine or a term of community service, but you couldn't be put in jail. And the trade-off for that was that infractions under our judicial system mean the defendant does not get the benefit of either a jury trial, the trial takes place rather in front of a judge, or a public defender. If you want to have an attorney with you, you have to hire or get a pro bono, that is, volunteer one, yourself. So Robert Flory argued that he was not going to either pay a fine or do community service for violating the sleeping ban, and he was doing this not merely because he disagreed with the sleeping ban and felt it was a blatant violation of a basic right to sleep at night and a blatant attack on poor people, but also because he said that it was an infraction, and it was an infraction which could not be punished by jail. In order to be jailed, he would have to be convicted of a different crime, that is to say, the crime of, let's say, not paying a fine. And interestingly enough, at that time, and I believe still, the legislature has made it a crime not to pay a vehicular fine. But the camping ban is a municipal code that is not a vehicular code. And at that time, and I believe still, there is no provision for a misdemeanor crime of not paying a non-vehicular fine. This all sounds very technical, perhaps. But the point was that Robert Flory, who had versed himself in the law on this issue and fought these camping ban laws for the previous 2 years, or I should say year and a quarter, was really seeking to find direct avenues for himself and other homeless people to effectively challenge unjust laws kind of within the system, within the legal system. And so he was arguing in court that he didn't have to pay the fine or go to jail. Instead, what he offered to do was, he said, the proper remedy for the state was to levy a civil judgment against his property. If they wanted him to pay the fine, they would have to confiscate his property. And of course, for him, he didn't have much property, and so It seemed a very ideal solution, and several judges agreed with him, in essence. Commissioner Salazar, and I believe, I'm not sure what Judge Kelly did, but I know that at least Commissioner Salazar took cases off the calendar because he, in essence, said, I'm not going to, there's no provision for putting a man in jail who refuses to pay a fine on this particular issue, but if the city attorney wants to, he can seek a judgment for the amount of the fine by confiscating the man's property. Well, that's what Robert Flory claimed, but Heather Morse, when she heard this argument, took him into court and had him immediately arrested for contempt of court and taken to jail without an attorney, without a hearing, without a jury trial, and just an arrogant disregard of all basic rights. And he actually, Robert Flory actually was released on a writ of habeas corpus on that same weekend, and his case was found to have merit in the sense that he had not been provided with an attorney when Heather Morse, Judge Morse, put him away in jail for not paying his fines. So consequently, after that, I brought a button into court which said, fuck judges without justice. And the bailiff brought this button to the attention of Heather Morse. And she requested me to leave the court to take out the button, and I said, Your Honor, I regard it as a principled free speech issue, and so she had me arrested. And this is the trial that I subsequently underwent in Watsonville, because that's where Heather Morse was on the bench, although the actual case originally happened in Santa Cruz. What you're going to hear now is a contempt of court trial before Heather Morse. We wanted it before another judge, because how can one judge objectively view what she herself has done? Well, here's the trial, and here's what we may be facing coming up in late August with more contempt of court cases, in the cases of Pat Ring, Sandra Roth, and others who are charged with violating the injunction. That is the injunction at City Hall.